Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to the members of the collective Guelph Renters Union. 1 week ago was rent day for people everywhere, and many of those people were not able to submit those rent checks because the COVID-19 quarantine has meant no money in the bank. Social media is filled with stories that are good, bad, and really ugly in terms of how some landlords are handling the situation. Some have understanding. Others, though, have had no qualms about passing go and heading straight to evict. But April 1st is the first hurdle in what might be a months-long dilemma for Canada's renters and, yes, their landlords. We could be on lockdown for months, and what happens as even the rent checks that are still being issued stop coming in? To pay the rent, or not pay the rent, as the case may be, is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Tuesday's Globe and Mail dipped into the issue with the headline, "Rent Strikes Loom Across Canada as Coronavirus Kills Daily Wage Jobs." In it, reporters Moira Warburton and Denise Peglina-Wan warned that landlords need to brace for rent strikes as we get closer to May, and that the government might have to step in with rent subsidies for people. According to the last Canadian census in 2016, 32% of households in Canada are renters, and according to a CIBC economist, about 70% of the rent that was due on April the 1st was paid. So more than two-thirds of Canadians that pay rent are still paying it, which is good, but that leaves a lot of people behind, and we're still after one full month without wages. How many more people are going to start being left behind? That's why activists have started organizing now. Starting in Toronto's Parkdale neighborhood and spreading around Ontario, renters are organizing with a simple message: keep your rent. While the short-term point of the campaign is very practical because a lot of renters live paycheck to paycheck and are not sitting on a rainy day fund, there is also the broader social justice message that our housing needs in this country are inadequate and expensive, even at the best of times. In other words, the COVID-19 pandemic is exposing long gaping holes in our housing system. Only now, people might finally be in a position to listen to that great need. At least that's the hope of the organizers of the Guelph branch of the Keep Your Rent Initiative, the Guelph Renters Union. This week on the Guelph Politicast, we will be joined by Moon Richards, Danny Drew, and Dustin Brown of the Guelph Renters Union as they talk about who their group is and why they came together to help protect renters. We also talk about how there's still different levels of privilege, even when it comes to renters, and how it's psychologically hard to take that first step and not pay your rent. We also talk about their thoughts on why we can't depend on the government to come to the rescue, what their campaign might look like in the long term, and how the quarantine has exacerbated the pre-existing conditions in our less than egalitarian housing market. The trio will also talk about what resources renters have to look after their rights. So I caught up with members of the Guelph Renters Union via Skype earlier this week.
Hi, I'm Moon, part of the Guelph Renters Union and Housing Advocates.
Andrew, I'm also an organizer for the Guelph Renters Union and Housing Advocates.
I'm Dustin Brown, also a co-organizer with these fine folks with the Guelph Renters Union and Housing Advocates.
So why don't we just start with Moon, maybe you could talk about how the group came together and how the group is organized and what your immediate goals are as we're tackling the issue with whether or not people will be able to pay their rent in the weeks to come.
Okay, I think I can start with part of the question, then maybe pass it on. I guess how we got started was through necessity, honestly. Personally, I could not afford to pay my rent, and I wanted to reach out to other people who were in similar positions because I know if I'm in that position, I'm not alone in that position. We saw over the last few weeks how many people have lost their jobs or have decreased hours, just not able to make ends meet. It truly just came out of necessity, I feel like.
Yeah, especially considering after the CERB was revealed as a mitigating factor in all of this, it was shown to be extremely insufficient, if not completely useless for most folks. So that just sort of steeled our position and really made it even more of a necessity beyond the immediate because there was no relief coming, we saw so well, as well as many others did.
Yeah, I'll add there that we heard from many people and saw many people who were getting either preemptive notices from their landlords or property managers stating, you know, rent is expected to be paid in full on April 1st. We won't be making any arrangements applied to these government assistance programs and EI. And, you know, you're on your own here. We're not going to defer your rent. We're not going to help you in any way, shape, or form. Just seeing that. And then in some of our experiences, as we started to, you know, try lobbying or applying pressure, people were sending emails to their landlords or property managers asking them to start lobbying for better supports that would be made available to renters. At that time, we were sitting not with CERB, but with the emergency care benefit and the emergency support benefit, both of which were, you know, as bad as CERB is for a lot of people who can't access it. Those two were much worse. They were less accessible. They were less money overall. And it was a lot more confusing, I think, for people to even consider applying to those. And also just with the, you know, the already existing housing crisis, where people are barely able to afford having a home and meeting all the other essentials of life in the first place, even outside of pandemic conditions. There were a lot of people who came forward to the initial Facebook event and Facebook group that we made. And from there, it has branched out into a smoothly operating and well-organized renters union, as opposed to just a moment on social media. So it's been very good to see people coalesce around that.
And it's sort of situations like these that, I don't want to say, you know, renters are unorganized, but, you know, there really is never or rarely is sort of like a governing organization that, you know, I know the University of Guelph has Shack and things like that, but, you know, for the community at large, renters are often on their own, that, you know, there's really no kind of resource for the community, you know, people who are renters able to organize, and especially in situations like this, but even in just situations, you know, where you normally encounter issues, you know, trying to deal with landlords as a renter, you know, what are your rights as a tenant? What are the landlord's responsibilities? There is a greater need than just sort of the immediate crisis here when that renters need to organize. Is there any agreement with that? I'm seeing heads nodding just so.
Definitely. Far too few people actually know their rights, even in, like you're saying, normal situations.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that even as organizers, we're finding out almost every day about tenants' rights and actually how really well structured they are and how protective they are. So in the knowledge of what tenants' rights are, you know, people should be able to feel comfortable with the idea of not paying rent for a certain amount of time if they're not able to. Mm. You know, these are crisis conditions, so that's different. But generally, the Landlord and Tenant Board, which is the only body that has the authority to enforce an eviction through their sheriff, that's usually a pretty backlogged hearing process where people, you know, they might receive a notice for eviction from their landlord, but will still have months to prepare and make a legal case and try to scrounge up some funding so that they can pay up and make things square before their hearing arrives.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then there's no chance of eviction. So I think that's something that people generally aren't aware of. It's that they do have a right to due process before being pushed out of their home. A lot of people will kind of, you know, miss a payment or two, and then the landlord who's impatient with people making up for payments, they'll issue an N-4, which is not an eviction notice. It's just a notice that, you know, you should pay by this date in order to avoid being issued an eviction notice. But a lot of people will have an N-4 in their mailbox and say, oh, I guess I have to move out. I can't afford to pay. I don't really have any options for making it by this deadline. I guess I'm evicted. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. People can really hold on and stand their ground, continue to live in their homes, and wait for community resources or or employment opportunities to kick in to get them to a good place without getting evicted. So that's something that we're really trying to communicate to people, is that they have a lot of time actually to figure things out, as long as they can make that difficult choice up front to not pay their rent now.
And I suppose too, we in the interest of balance, could add that, you know, landlord sounds like a very, I guess, you know, authoritarian term, right? It's got lord right there in the name. But I think one of the things, at least I've seen on social media, is that not all landlords are the same, and some landlords are, you know, do have at least the common decency to recognize exceptional circumstances when they occur, and you know, are willing to accommodate.
Yeah, while this is true, like, they can have common decency to them. It's more of a structural problem. We have nothing particularly against these individuals. It's just that they shouldn't have that power. They shouldn't be able to decide. Mm. They shouldn't be the ones to be able to decide whether they have decency or not. Mm. That shouldn't be, like, arbitrated by them.
That's a great point. I want to talk about the current situation in terms of the you know, what feedback you guys are getting from the community. I mean, I doubt you've been in touch with everyone who rents in Guelph. It'd be wonderful if you had, but appreciating that it's unlikely that you have. At the same time, though, you know, what does the landscape look like? How many people are really struggling right now? People like Moon, who are stuck with no income coming in and are having trouble making the rent, and I guess maybe further is, how many people are in conflict right now with their landlord in terms of the people you've been in touch with?
I think that's a really great question, because I think I'm also in a place of privilege when I say that I don't have money coming in right now. Like, there have been people who have been going without for quite some time, and that's not being acknowledged. There's also people who are excluded from funding, who will not be getting funding coming in. That's immigrants, students, people on visas, people who have made any sort of income will be taxed for that income back. Right. So it puts people in a very precarious place where they not only are they forced to live off of the taxable income that the government is giving them, but they also can't make money to accommodate the gap in funding which they're going to receive. So and when I'm saying that I'm lucky in the sense that I can access CERB, a lot of people cannot. Like I said, immigrants, people on ODSP, people on OW do not receive a surplus in funding. Their funding is very much below what the 2,000, well, 1,800 once it's taxed, right, that we're going to receive. So I think we put that into perspective. There's a lot more people than you'd think who consistently cannot afford rent already, and this crisis is exacerbating that problem already. And again, that's not considering the people who are working part-time, the people who are artists and small owners who are trying to make some money right now, who now will not qualify for CERB because they have to have no income at all come in for 14 days.
Right.
Like, there's a lots of gaps there that are quite frankly being missed. I was seeing a stat that was about one-third of the population, one-third of Canadians won't be able to access CERB. So in that sense, who is CERB for if it's not for everyone who lives here, not just Canadians?
Right. I think Moon makes a great point that luck is a big I guess point of this, that, you know, privilege it also plays a role, that you know, under the best of circumstances, we have people in our community who have trouble paying the rent.
I just want to add, you had an original question, but just how many people have reached out to us, and,
right,
how many people have we been able to get in contact with as well? So right now we're sitting at the definite hundreds who have either been in contact with us at some point through our Facebook group, which has 250 people in it, and, you know, they're being notified of their rights every day. We have an email list that's approaching 100, and there are many more who have seen posters that we've put up around town. We've had cars that have gone around with Keep Your Rent, Guelph Renters Union banners draped over the sides of them, and they've hung out in grocery store parking lots to interact with the people who are in line there. So I think our reach is a lot larger than our online profile suggests.
Mm.
And I also that the best way to do this is, you know, as a renters union, we're trying to equip people with resources that they can use to organize amongst themselves. It's not just, you know, us being a centralized control unit of this movement. People need to, if they want to really keep themselves safe from eviction, work with their neighbors and their friends and families and, you know, other people who might share the same landlord across town. If people can connect and form sort of tenants associations and act together collectively in solidarity rather than letting landlords try to negotiate with them individually,
yeah,
that makes a big difference. And so that's what we're trying to do, is to equip people to do their own organizing wherever they're at.
Like, yeah, oftentimes, like, when people think of unions, they'll think of the way that often that state-sanctioned unions in industry are structured, where they have a governing body. We don't want to do any sort of governing, just to facilitate community power, essentially, just to allow people to express the power that they are capable of possessing themselves and coming to together.
Right, and it's important to keep in mind that there are a lot of big property management companies, and you know, you may feel like your building or your property is alone on an island, but you know, you could very well be part of you know, Skyline, for example. Not to name names, but you know, they are a big property management company in the city, and you know, you can organize your building, but it's also one piece in a much bigger I guess, property management system. I don't want to say empire, that sounds a bit too negative, but that, you know, tenants together have real power is what I guess we're trying to get at. The other part of this, I think we want to know is, for you guys and for the organizing the different tenants in the city, what's kind of the end game here? I mean, not that... It's tough to say because the pandemic, we don't know what the end date is. There's no kind of deadline for when it'll be over. But even at that, there are a lot of, you know, questions about how much government support there'll be, you know, when deferred payments will have to be paid off. You know, what are you guys working towards? Or is this just about sort of like the immediacy of like right now, as so long as basically the country is shut down? Maybe we shouldn't be paying rent.
I would say that this is a collective of people, so there are going to be different end goals that exist, and there are also many different reasons to withhold rent in these current conditions. You know, you might be a person who quite literally has $5 in the bank account and really cannot pay rent and is scared that they're going to get evicted down the road. You might have somebody who has a couple thousand dollars in their account, and they're paying, you know, they're supposed to pay $1,500 in rent, but then they don't know if they're going to be able to afford food and medicine and essentials. And there are many other people, too, you know, across our organizing efforts who think, you know, if we emerge from this pandemic in probably 18 to 24 months, according to what we're hearing about how long it takes to get a vaccine out to the wide population, if we come out of that and are still paying what we currently pay, according to some studies, 46% of household expenses going into just housing costs, whether that's rent or mortgage or utilities, then, you know, irrespective of what this union is, society is going to continue to suffer.
Mm.
There are immediate needs that we're trying to address by giving people a safe place to come if they can't afford rent or don't think they're going to be able to afford rent over coming months. But there's also this long term, you know, those needs aren't any more immediate. It's just that this pandemic is exposing how precarious many people in the working class really are,
right,
compared to other privileged members of our society.
Mm.
So that's kind of some of the guiding thought that is behind this. If I can take things a layer up from renters to, you know, people who own homes and are on mortgages, or even, you know, landlords who are on mortgages, and are legitimately in precarious life situations if their tenants don't pay rent. This really isn't about tenants versus landlords. This is about people who are in precarious situations due to this longstanding housing crisis and the banks and investors who have served and controlled the housing market for so long in order to let it become what it is. We recognize that that's where the real struggle lies. People are being asked to beg for scraps when it comes to housing because of the way that the market is, while power and wealth accumulates in the hands of just a few. But there are some wrinkles that we know need to be worked out with that as well, such as the fact that people who are on pensions, often those pensions are invested into bonds that have housing investments wrapped up into them, and that's
right.
Something that certainly would need to be figured out a few layers up from renters keeping their rent. But the fact remains that renters should not be expected to take the burden of this crisis on their own financial portfolios, which are rather limited. We don't generally have assets to fall back on.
Well, Dustin, you paint a bigger picture, I guess, that I think the one group that hasn't been really asked to do anything yet has been the banks. There's been really no discussion. I know that people have been testing with some of the leaders, the prime minister, the premier. I mean, it's really kind of more Justin Trudeau's jurisdiction. But nothing's been asked of the banks yet, and that seems to be the first, I guess, the first line to be crossed if something more on a national scale were to be done to help. To help renters, because where does all the money eventually end up? It eventually ends up back at the bank, whether you are a landlord and you own property, or whether the renter paying the landlord. The banks have to be addressed at some point, do they not?
Ooh, they absolutely are. Just profiteering. Like, this is basically crisis profiteering. They're just sitting back, like, oh, we're doing the best we can. We're maybe allowing some certain mortgage holders that meet certain conditions to defer, not cancel their mortgage payments. Oh, that's the best we can do. Our hands are tied. We have so few profits. We didn't save anything up. Flies in our wallet. Yeah, basically you covered it. I think though, your question is, this has to be addressed nationally, if not through a massive grassroots movement.
I'll add to that that the federal government certainly has powers under the Bank Act, and I think a certain section of the Constitution Act as well, to order banks to stop collecting mortgage payments. That's something that Jugmeet Singh has brought up as he was advocating on, it was Power in Politics a few days ago. He's saying that the NDP position was back then, I'm not sure what it is now, because I see them pushing for universal basic income more than anything. But back then, he was talking about how we need to enact a cancellation of all payments related to rent, debt, including credit card debt, student card debt, or student debt, anything of that nature, and mortgage payments. So that's something that would benefit all residents and really secure people who aren't making an income in I don't want to say quick, because that trivializes the amount of work that the federal government would have to do with the provinces and territories and,
right,
and municipalities even. That's certainly a lot, but that is a way to do kind of means testing according to what people pay currently in housing. If we can enact a way to have them keep the money that they normally pay for housing, then you don't have the problem with CERB being $2,000 and going to people in Toronto who pay rent of $2,500. I'm not sure how people in that situation are expected to make ends meet. I'm not sure how, a single parent living in Guelph in a $1,300 single bedroom apartment with three kids is supposed to make those $2,000 a month last. And I guess they would get another $250 per child, but cost of living per person is $1,000 a month. So CERB is asking people to live on poverty wage, especially if half or more of it is going to go straight to their landlord.
Right.
So there's some serious things that really need to be worked out. And I think that the what Jagmeet Singh was talking about with cancellation of rent and debt payments, I think that's the sort of solution we need to be looking towards.
Hmm. Moon, let me ask you, because you brought up your situation specifically, if you know you had the power to, or the access, frankly, to talk directly to the Prime Minister or the Premier of the province, you know, people who can call up on these authorities, you know, and to help people in a situation like yours, you know, I hate to phrase it like this, but what would be an ideal sort of way to help people like you address your current issues and your housing situation?
Personally, I don't think I would be looking towards the government for relief. historically, currently, the government has quite frankly never been on my side. The government has never done things in the best interest of me. If the government was doing things in the best interest of their people, we wouldn't be in this situation. Like, how long have we known about COVID? How long have we known about the risks that would come with it? How long do we know about the economic collapse? From what I'm seeing, at least December, January. So I'm honestly, quite frankly, if the government cared, they would have done more to start. That is truly how I personally feel.
I think coming off of that, that's why something like a renters union is so important, because it doesn't, our organization doesn't wait for government policy to help renters. We get renters to organize together so that they can protect each other from any potential negative consequences down the road. You know, people organizing amongst their neighbors, that gives them a lot of leverage that they can bring against people who are asking them to make payments. Also with, you know, people collectively withholding their rent, maybe they're able to donate a little bit of, you know, a portion of that to a support fund that we are managing that can then be used to assist people who are in immediate danger of eviction or non-payment. So, you know, that's more what we're trying to go towards. You know, there are things that are going to happen in Parliament and discussions to be had, but it's not rational for us to wait, given what Moon was saying, the historical context and what we've learned about government inaction. It doesn't make sense to wait for that. It makes sense to take initiative, organize amongst ourselves, and protect each other in our homes.
As we've discussed, this union is very much about sort of self-actualizing. So let's just start with like the obvious things. If you are a renter and if people are struggling with if they can't pay their rent, maybe their landlord is doesn't care or is unmoved, you know, to help them out. You know, where can people begin? How can people begin to, stand up for their rights as a tenant? How would you suggest they begin?
I'd say the first step is the easiest logistically, but maybe the most difficult emotionally, which is to simply don't pay your rent on now May 1st, since we're in April now. Then, you know, before or after that, reach out to the Guelph Renters Union. We have a website up now that will help people identify what the actions that they can take are. So the first step is to just get connected with us by going to the website and joining our email list. Then the next step is essentially, to join us on Facebook and follow us on social media as well, so that we can be connected on various levels. The next step after that is really to read our thorough, currently 10-page organizing guide, so that they can have a nice walkthrough of understanding what their rights are, understanding the best way and some resources to assist in forming a tenants association, valid whether you live in an apartment building or in a detached house with a few units, or even if it's just you in one house and it's you mano a mano versus your landlord. Again, recognizing that this isn't necessarily just a versus issue, but That said, you know, we have resources available for people in any kind of situation where they can figure out ways to connect with their neighbors and co-tenants in a way that gives them leverage. Mm. So really that's it. It's keep your rent on rent day, quote unquote rent day, and then go forward and get organized using the how-to guide that we've developed. Mm. And also to reach out at support@GuelphRentersUnion.com if there are any hang-ups or questions along the way. I don't know if Moon or Danny have anything to add there.
I'd just like to add, just for to get over that emotional hurdle of actually just not paying rent, trying to get around that, is you can just try it for 14 days without consequence.
Mm.
For the N4, I believe, is not valid until 14 days of non-payment.
Yeah, that's right. So the minimum amount of time that an N4 has to sit before it's you know, has its deadline for payment is 14 days. So even if it feels weird, you can just not pay rent, and then halfway through the month, see how you feel about continuing to not pay rent. And we think that generally people who try that out and experience what it's like to not pay for housing, they're going to want to continue to not pay for housing. So it's really, you know, it has a lot of like pre-configurative potential. Getting people used to the feeling of housing not being a commodity that they have to pay for really could serve to mobilize people in a direction where that becomes more of a reality.
Just to add, personally, I found it very, very freeing to not pay my rent. It was very nice to see my landlady. Hi, no, not paying you today. That was very satisfying for me. Would just like to point that out.
Fair enough. I think one of the things I've been thinking about across many different aspects of what's going on with COVID-19 and the pandemic is whether or not things can go back to normal. You know, we've seen this with food service workers, people who are being seen as essential workers now, getting some, in some cases, getting paid a living wage now or getting additional benefits. We're not in the prediction business, obviously, but Dustin, you touched on it, you know, can this be sustained? Has a valuable lesson, do you think, been learned about how important housing is and maybe how overpriced our housing is? Can we go back to the way things were once everything goes back to quote unquote normal?
That's a really great question. I think, I guess a counter question to that was normal working?
Mm.
You know, was it helping the most people? Was it benefiting everyone in our society? Was everyone being uplifted? And that answer is very clearly no. And we can see that that's possible when we see that now grocery store workers are making $18 an hour, where we see now, like, there's hazard pay for things that should have had hazard pay before, quite frankly, because you're still attracting, you kind of see, like, the supports that could have been made available but weren't. And that's almost, that kind of enrages me to press further. Like, how much further can we go?
Right.
How much more people can we support? How much better can we make our society? Truly, if we can do these things, and it's very easy to do now, like, what, in 2 weeks? Service workers got, well, some, I shouldn't say all, but some were able to raise their wage. I think it's very clear that it can happen and it should be happening.
All these things they've always told us are impossible, or, oh, please just wait. They were possible all along. And they just said no. They just decided to make everyone suffer a little bit more.
Mm.
I'd like to add, I think it'll be all too easy for things to go back to normal, even though they were bad. And that's why we need to do this work now.
Mm.
Well, it's very obvious to people that things weren't good.
Mm.
Before, you could maybe wave it away, or maybe you were too stressed or under too much pressure to actually truly think about it or truly realize just how bad things were. But now that it's been laid bare, it has to be made concrete in people's minds, or else the relief of coming off of this incredibly stressful global situation may make it very simple for people to just go back to that stressful, but it's oftentimes untenable, but quote unquote normal status quo.
Right.
I'll add to that too, that normal, a lot of the time it works for for many people, but it doesn't work for a lot of the most marginalized and put aside of people in this country. What this crisis is doing in part is putting everybody in the same group of precarity all of a sudden. So that there was a lot of clamoring on a widespread basis for government checks in the mail. That's something that people who are disabled and on ODSP or not able to work and on OW, like that's a reality that they've been experiencing for quite a long time. And frankly, a lot of people who do well in normal times tend to villainize or ostracize people who are in that boat. But now that everybody's there, I think there's potential for people to develop some empathy and solidarity with people who've been really set aside by the systems that we have in place. But that only happens if we do a lot of work organizing together on the ground, ensuring that nobody falls through the cracks during the COVID economic scheme. And that's why it's so important that, and it's a disgrace, actually, that CERB and EI are not going to be universally available for everybody who's in need. Thinking of a person who was on unpaid sick leave or injury leave or parental leave during all of 2019, they didn't make $5,000 over the past 12 months. That means they're not eligible for CERB. Young people who were anticipating getting summer employment, or recent grads who were anticipating entering the workforce right now, the latter group is, from what I've seen, certainly not getting any support. But summer students are like, what did the Prime Minister offer yesterday? He said you should work on a farm or a fishery. That's just not a reality for all of the students who are looking for employment. And it's insulting to expect a lot of people to leave their homes and go across the country to a farm or a fishery just because the government's unwilling to give them support. And I'm hearing now as well from people on the ground that Indigenous people who work on reserve and don't make any taxable income because income tax does not apply to them, they're applying for CERB and getting to the point where it says you have to have $5,000 of income, and they're worried that because it wasn't taxable income that they made,
right,
that they're going to be dinged when it comes tax time for later. You know, they think that the government is going to take all those $2,000 a month payments back from them and then apply a penalty. So people are discouraged from applying if they work on reserve. And that's something that is inexcusable. It should have been foreseeable. If we can learn about it on the fly so quickly as people on the ground, then why do we have public officials who are incapable or unwilling of addressing those problems up front? Anyway, the point is we don't trust them to apply something universally. So it's up to people as a collective to fight for that so that we don't further any inequalities that already existed.
I think what, Dustin, you just made the point that there are so many different issues and that maybe going back to what Moon said, the government solution is not the only one, and it is going to be up to all of us. And speaking of all of us, I'm going to give you guys an opportunity to mention your links and where people can get in touch with you and how they can get in touch with you if they want to talk more about not paying their rent.
Okay. Yeah. I just would direct people to our website at GuelphRentersUnion.com. We have Twitter and Instagram, both under Keep Your Rent Guelph. And we also have a Facebook group still called Keep Your Rent Guelph, where people are in there as a group, sharing their experiences and sharing advice for how to proceed. If what we said, if you're not a renter or you're a renter who's really okay right now and can continue to live life quote unquote normally, but this cause moved you and you feel that people should be protected from eviction, we would ask that when our support fund goes live. You'll see it on the website. Please consider making monthly donations to that so that none of our neighbors end up without a home, either during or after this crisis. This is something that's incredibly important. And, you know, as neighborhoods and as people in a city, I think we should be advocating for each other with a little bit of contribution in that way. But if you are a renter, just know that we're here to support you. You can get in touch with us anytime at support@guelphrentersunion.com. And just tell us about your situation and we will identify ways that we can help you. We're well organized. We don't charge any service fees. And we are 100% volunteer run and here to help.
And once again, that was Moon Richards, Danny Drew, and Dustin Brown of the Guelph Renters Union. To find those resources they've mentioned and to learn more about your rights as a renter and how you can help the group organize, you can go to GuelphRentersUnion.com, GuelphRentersUnion, all one word, .com. And you can also find resources from the Government of Ontario on their website. Just go to ontario.ca/page/renting-ontario-your-rights. And you can find both of those links on the show notes for this episode of the podcast. And speaking of which, that is all for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics, Ed Siddale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University of Guelph campus at the University Center there. And to learn more about CFRU, you can go to their website at cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast every Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, and you can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will also get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can also go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. For all the latest local political news, you can go to guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.